Hi, this is Monica Abbott, and I'm inviting you to be a part of the first annual MA14 golf tournament brought to you by Shields. We'll have golf, a silent auction, putting contest, and it all benefits scholarship opportunities for female athletes. Learn more at monicaabbott.com.
Mahomes, shotgun snap, drops back five, got the block. They come on the side, he winds up, he throws a long pass, wide open hill, catches the ball at the 22 in San Francisco. What a play by Mahomes!
NFL Live, weekdays at 7 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Presented by Easton Roofing. Check them out at eastonroofing.com. Easton Roofing, where integrity matters.
And Miller Lite, the original light beer, brewed with great taste and only 96 calories.
Kansas City has won their first Super Bowl in 50 years. 50 years, a lifetime.
Hello and welcome to another edition of NFL Live KC on your home for the National Football League, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am Nate Bucati here with you for the next hour as we get you ready for football. It is training camp time. Look, it's the acclimation period right now, so we're not exactly getting on the field and having action, but we are getting Zoom conferences with coaches and players. We're getting news, we're getting trades, we're getting signings, and we're going to break a lot of that down for you over the next hour. We'll have a lot of information and a lot of voices that you will hear on today's show. We will hear from Chiefs head coach Big Red, Andy Reid. We are going to hear from the VP of Sports and Performance, Rick Burkholder, about the protocols to try to keep these guys safe from COVID so that this season can get underway. We are going to hear from Patrick Mahomes. We're going to hear from offensive lineman Lucas Niang. He's a rookie on this team that might get pressed into some duty because of some news we're about to get to here in a little bit as well. And we'll also go out to Seattle, check in with Matt Michaelis of KJR to talk about the big Jamal Adams trade. Does that make the Seattle Seahawks the favorites in the NFC all of a sudden? We'll check in with him, and we'll hear from our good buddy Adam Teicher from ESPN.com about the Chiefs and other activities around the NFL. So we got a full show for you today, but everything in today's world right now, like it or not, has to start with the COVID epidemic and how it will shape the way we watch our sports and if we get to watch our sports in 2020. Of course, there's the backdrop right now of the news coming out today of the outbreak on the team for the Miami Marlins, causing Major League Baseball to cancel some games, change a lot of plans, and it's kind of one of those red flags that makes you say, okay, what can the NFL learn from this? What challenges might be on the horizon for the NFL? And can they learn and overcome those things? Well, one of the guys that has to answer all of those questions for the Kansas City Chiefs is their VP of Sports and Performance, Rick Burkholder. He also has a new job title this year, that of Infectious Disease Control Officer. He's in charge of trying to maintain this whole COVID situation for the Kansas City Chiefs and all of the protocols that they have around the team to try to make sure they can get this season going and keep it going once we get there. He also is so well-respected in the NFL, he's one of the guys that helped coordinate the league protocols. He spoke to the media this weekend, and he says, look, we all want a vaccine, but we can't sit around and wait for one, hoping that's going to be the cure to get NFL football back on the field.
Just a little education. The fastest vaccine in history, in world history, is 4 years, and that was for the mumps. We are right now at about 5 months. So, everybody asks that question, how are you going to play football without a vaccine? You know, there's viruses out there like HIV that never got a vaccine. The common cold doesn't have a vaccine. Herpes doesn't have a vaccine, right? So we have viruses that don't have vaccines. There's no telling that we're going to get a vaccine for this. So we can't think like that. We've got to go to the next step. If we get the vaccine, great. We've got to go to the next step of testing. Every team's going to have positive tests. We know that. Society, I mean, we're testing positive at 70,000 a day right now. We know that. What we hope is we limit our tests, or limit our positive tests, and when we get a positive test, we act accordingly with the CDC to get those people isolated, get them healthy, and get them safely back to work. And there's a whole lot of protocol that would take me an hour to talk to you about, because it's a lot of it's on a not an individual basis, but an individual case. So it doesn't matter whether it's Patrick or whether it's me. we've got to follow the guidelines that are positive test, symptoms, days, antibodies, all that kind of stuff to determine when it's safe for that person to come back to work. And I think the NFL will release that eventually. I'm just, I don't think I've been cleared to release the actual days. Certainly all of us that do healthcare for the NFL and the coaches and the general managers, we've asked a question about Fridays before games. Right now, we don't have games, so that's a good thing. But they're putting some protocols together as we get closer to game time.
All right, one thing that the NFL has had over some of these other leagues is time. Have they used that time wisely? Can they get this thing going? We're all going to be optimistic. We want to see it. We will find out. One player who won't be on the field no matter what, though, is Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, the first NFL player to opt out of playing in 2020. We're going to talk about that next as we are off and running with this edition of NFL Live KC on your home for the NFL in Kansas City, Sports Radio 810 WHB. NFL Live KC on your home for the National Football League in Kansas City. Sports Radio 810 WHB continues. I'm Nate Bucati with you. And the biggest story over the weekend involving the Kansas City Chiefs involved Super Bowl winning offensive guard and heroic doctor, in my opinion, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, making the decision to become the first NFL player to opt out of the 2020 season. He did so with a statement that I'm going to read to you right now. Quote, given the worldwide sanitary crisis we are currently experiencing, the NFL and the NFLPA have agreed to significant health and safety protocols to protect the players. There is no doubt in my mind the Chiefs' medical staff have put together a strong plan to minimize the health risks associated with COVID-19, but some risks will remain. This is one of the most difficult decisions I have had to make in my life, but I must follow my convictions and do what I believe is right for me personally. That is why I have decided to take the opt-out option negotiated by the league and the NFLPA and officially opt out of the 2020 NFL season. Being at the front line during this offseason has given me a different perspective on this pandemic and the stress it puts on individuals and our healthcare system. I cannot allow myself to potentially transmit the virus in our communities simply to play the sport that I love. If I am to take risks, I will do it caring for patients. I want to thank everyone in the Kansas City Chiefs organization for their support and understanding. Stay safe, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif. So he is making the decision to opt out. He is not able to work in the capacity as an actual doctor right now as he still has to finish his residencies, but he has worked as basically an orderly for long-term care facilities in his native country of Canada, and apparently he's going to continue to do that during the course of this pandemic instead of playing football. Of course, Kansas City Chiefs had some media availability this weekend, so they spoke about it. We'll start with Andy Reid, who was not surprised by LDT's decision.
I know Larry, though. I mean, I've been with him here now since he came into the National Football League. So I get it. I mean, I just think it's what a tribute to him and to the profession. If I didn't know how doctors are wired, but I know. I mean, I've got it. I know exactly how they're wired and the love and dedication that they have to that, to protecting and healing. And so they're natural givers and healers. And so it didn't surprise me. No, it did not. To answer your question, like I said, I had a great visit with them. A unique situation.
And interesting, as you heard Andy Reid there talk about his family members being in the medical community, his mother actually going to medical school at McGill University in Montreal, which is the same place that Laurent Duvernay-Tardif went to med school. So that is quite a coincidence there. Meanwhile, the man that LDT was in charge of protecting in the past, Patrick Mahomes, will have to have somebody else protecting him now because LDT is out protecting patients at this time in his life. But Patrick Mahomes says that Duvernay-Tardif has the support of all of his teammates.
Yeah, I mean, for everybody that asks about, everybody respects the decision 100%. I mean, Larry's a guy who loves football, but he also loves his other passions, and being a doctor is extremely important, especially at this time that we're at in this world. And so for him, I know it's difficult for him. He wants to be out here with us. He wants to be a part of us. He wants to be a part of the guys. But at the same time, He wants to make sure he's doing something to make the world a better place. And I believe that he is doing that. He's seen it firsthand, and he understands that he needs to be in that place now, and we're going to respect it and give him as much support as we can.
All right, so there's Patrick Mahomes. As he says, the entire team supports the decision made by Laurent Duvernay-Tardif. Meanwhile, what happens at the offensive line position for the Kansas City Chiefs now? Well, one of the big stories in conjunction with this was the fact that the Kansas City Chiefs agreed to a deal with veteran guard Kelechi Osemele. He's, of course, an Iowa State alum and has been a fantastic offensive lineman in his career, 31 years old, 8-year NFL veteran. He's played with three teams, the Jets, the Raiders. Amongst those, he was an all-pro first team in 2017, but had a shoulder injury, and that was the source of a big dispute with the New York Jets and LDT. Turns out after the surgery that it sounds like he wasn't lying. He really did have a serious shoulder injury. So we'll see what he has to offer coming back from that right now. But as for the Chiefs, Osemele is not the only player that they can look to at the guard position. You might remember during the draft just a couple of months ago, they took offensive lineman Lucas Niang out of TCU. Now, he has played mostly at the tackle spot, but has played some guard in his life as well. And Andy Reid was asked if Niang could be an option to move inside to guard.
Well, let's get him in here first. I mean, let's get him in practicing, and we'll get him adjusted and see how he does. But Remmers is another one that we picked up who's a good football player. And we've got good players here right now. So we're going to be we'll be okay and at the offensive line. And obviously to add him into the mix, we're excited to see him. We get a little chance here with the rookies to visit with him. So we're excited for that. But, yeah, I think we're in good shape all the way around. We'd love to add Larry, absolutely. But we understand his cause. Absolutely understand that too.
So non-committal from Andy Reid, but one of the things we know about Andy Reid is he does love his offensive linemen to have a little bit of versatility about them. He will play them at the guard spot. He'll play them at the tackle spot. He likes guys that can do both. You have to think if they drafted Niang, they feel like he's got the opportunity to do that as well. So they have options on the interior of the offensive line. Meanwhile, what about Lucas Niang himself? He said he wants to be prepared just in case he is called to make that switch.
Ever since getting drafted and we had that conversation at the combine about me potentially moving to guard, I've been practicing both guard and tackle, trying to get comfortable so I can be as versatile as possible.
There's Lucas Niang, one of the candidates to possibly fill in for Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, who is making what I believe is a heroic decision to help people in need and risk his own health on the healthcare front lines instead of doing it on the gridiron on Sundays for the Kansas City Chiefs coming up in 2020. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to replay the comments and conversation we had with Adam Teicher from ESPN.com about all these things and others related to the world of the National Football League. It is NFL Live KC on your home for the NFL in Kansas City, Sports Radio 810 WHB. NFL Live KC on your home for the National Football League. Sports Radio 810 WHB continues on this Monday evening. Every Monday morning on the Border Patrol with myself and Stephen St. John and Jake Gutierrez, we have a nice long conversation with Adam Teicher. Nobody breaks down the Kansas City Chiefs or covers them better than Adam does. And of course, he's got a broad-based knowledge of the NFL as well, working for ESPN. And we talked about all of those things with Adam. We talked about Laurent Duvernay-Tardif's decision not to play this year in 2020. We talked about a big trade involving the Seattle Seahawks. Going to play that entire conversation for you right now, starting with his reaction to the news about Laurent Duvernay-Tardif.
Yeah, I mean, not surprising. If you were asking me if I thought there was one Chiefs player who's most likely to do this, not for medical reasons, I would have said Duvernay-Tardif. You know, he's... I think one thing that's misunderstood about him maybe is that I think a lot of people don't understand how much he does appreciate football and loves playing football. I mean, it's not just a well-paying hobby for him. I think a lot of people sort of thought that about him over the years since he's been here. He loves playing, and It's an important part of his life. But he always kind of knew that he was going to have to choose between football and medicine at some point. And this is that time now. He felt like his calling was up in Canada helping out with the crisis. And I find it impossible to have fault with his decision. Who am I to tell him that that's the wrong decision? You can practice medicine the rest of his life. You can only play football, for a finite period of years. But he's obviously feels a pretty strong calling, and I think it's an awesome thing that he's doing here.
He said in his statement that he's witnessed the damage that this virus does up close and in person, and that's one of the things that really swayed his position on this. And I'm curious, when you say that, Adam, do you think this is him walking away from football altogether, or is this just while the pandemic's going on, he's going to do what he can to help out? Do you expect him to come back when it's over?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that play into that, Nate. He's got to start his residency. Once you graduate from med school, you have a clock, and I'm not sure how long that period is, but there's a period where you have to start your medical residency. And he's I don't know if it's that close, but he's going to have to make a decision here pretty soon what he wants to do. I know he doesn't. If you don't start your residency by a certain time, then you have to you have to go back to zero. You have to go through med school all over again, and he doesn't want to do that. So the clock is ticking for him. He always knew it wasn't going to be a long-term thing for him because of his medical students or his situation as a doctor. So that plays into it. Now, that issue aside, I don't know why he couldn't come back and play again next year. He's only 30 years old. My understanding is that his contract gets delayed, so whatever was in his contract for this year will be pushed back to next year. So if the Chiefs want him or another team wants him, I don't see why he couldn't play football again. But, again, his situation is really complicated. Who knows what COVID's going to look like this time next year? Will he still feel the calling that the world needs him in other areas as opposed to football? It's tough to make a call on that, but I do think that his career is not going to last real as a football player. It's not going to last real long, and whether this is it certainly could be. That thought has occurred to me for sure that he might be done playing pro football, but we'll see whether it happens or not.
Adam Teicher's our guest, and so the Chiefs do get some salary cap relief this year, with how you just explained how his contract works, and some of that they've used to sign Kelechi Osemele, who was a former All-Pro with the Raiders, and we talked earlier about his injury situation and the dispute he had with his former team, the New York Jets, last year. So maybe explain that to us now, the situation on the interior offensive line where the Chiefs do have some options there, but how do you see this playing out?
Yeah, they do have a lot of options, but they've got two openings now. The two offensive starters from the Super Bowl who were gone are both starting guards now, So the Chiefs have a couple openings, and I think some of this is going to have to play out a little bit. Assembly will obviously be first in line. I'm assuming he'll claim one of those jobs. And then you got Andrew Wiley started a number of games for the Chiefs last year at guard. Martinez Rankin started a number of games for the Chiefs, five games for the Chiefs at guard. They've got some younger guys they kind of like. So the Chiefs have some Nick Allegretti is a guy the Chiefs might want to look at there. So the Chiefs have some possibilities there. Lucas Nying, how quickly can the Chiefs get him up to speed? It wouldn't surprise me to see him in the mix as we go along for a starting spot at guard. So the Chiefs have some options here, and it's just a matter of how they sort through all these. But I thought it was interesting that the Chiefs went out after learning about Duvernay-Tardif's decision and felt like they had to have somebody. So that tells me a little bit. They're not they felt like, another guy, I forgot, I'm sorry, they got Mike Remmers. They signed Mike Remmers as a free agent this year. He's kind of a veteran journeyman who's played tackle and guard. So the Chiefs have a bunch of bodies here, but the fact that they had to felt like compelled to go out and get Austin Neely tells me a little bit that they're not completely comfortable with the guys they have, that maybe they can fill two spots there. So we'll see, but it's going to be interesting to see how all this shakes out, no doubt.
How can they afford Osemele? Did they get cap relief on the $2.75 million?
Yes.
Is that how they were able to afford him?
Yeah, they won't have to pay Duvernay Tardif's contract, so that's some cap relief right there. I think it was kind of a net gain for the Chiefs against their cap, what they're saving from Duvernay Tardif and what they're paying Osemele now. So yeah, there is a net gain there. So it was a trade in that respect, financially at least, that was in the Chiefs' benefit.
How good do you think Osemele can be at this point in his career?
He's not that far removed from being one of the better guards in the league. You know, 3 years ago, he was an All-Pro, I believe. I think 2017, he was a first-team All-Pro. So can be a dominant player. You know, you just don't know where he is. You know, he's coming off the injury. He had the surgery last year. Obviously things were awful with the Jets. So you don't know where he is. You just never know. I'm eager to see what he can do for the Chiefs. But, if he can get back to anything close to what he was 3 or 4 years ago, then this is a great move for the Chiefs. I think this will work out just fine. If he's the player he was last year, if that's who he is now, then, he may not even last the season with the Chiefs.
Adam Teicher is our guest. Adam, Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes spoke over the weekend. But also Rick Burkholder spoke, and we're going to play some of those comments coming up in the next segment. And obviously a topic with him and also Andy Reid, just the return to football and all the challenges that are ahead of them. First, with Burkholder, what were your main takeaways from his lengthy comments?
Just all the things that the Chiefs and every NFL team had to do to get ready for this, sort of on the fly. And there's really no blueprint for this. It's not like you can look in a book and say, okay, here's what we need to do here. They're sort of having to figure things out kind of on the fly. And, it's tough. And, the one thing that struck me when I asked both Pat Mahomes and Andy Reid, how comfortable they were in the building there. And they both said the same thing. Mahomes was really good. He said, I was kind of nervous about this, but now I can see how the setup is going to be and I'm fine. And Andy Reid said, we're about as safe as we can be in this building. But, Andy Reid said something else that's probably true. He said, where outbreaks are going to occur is not in this building. They're going to start outside this building. Guys have to show the discipline that it's going to take to make this work. And we think that, for now, 90 guys, and then even during the season, counting the practice squad, almost 70 guys are going to be able to show that discipline every single day. So that to me is going to be telling here. If things are so good in the buildings, And I know that that's the plan that they have. If the things are so good in the buildings, are guys going to have the discipline not to bring this into the buildings, if that makes any sense? So we'll see where all this goes. But I know that's where a lot of the concern lies.
I guess I would follow up that question, too, with if positivity rates are well over 6% in the city that they're living in, even if they're living responsibly, is it realistic to think that all those guys can live in that community and have not one or two of them bring it in every once in a while? And I'm curious if your thoughts on what's happened with the Miami Marlins this morning, mm-hmm. and them having to give that game canceled, if that changes your outlook on what's going to happen with the NFL at all.
Yeah, that's an ominous sign. It sure is. That is really ominous, what's going on in Miami. And who knows where did the Marlins, did that come from another team that maybe they played against in exhibition or even the Phillies? Did it come from guys going out in Philadelphia recently? I mean, who knows? I mean, you just, that's part of the problem. You just don't know with this. So, that's an ominous sign right there. I mean, the baseball's not even into their first full week of this, and there's already an issue here with at least one team. So, it's going to be crazy, this is going to be a really buckle up deal. I mean, I think this is going to take us on some weird twists and turns as we go along here. So we'll see what happens, but it's going to be kind of crazy.
And the rookies also had a chance to talk on Saturday, Adam, and that we've all discussed repeatedly how the Chiefs don't have a whole lot of turnover, and that could certainly work in their advantage with this weird offseason that everyone's having to take part in. But we did expect Willie Gay Jr. to get playing time and be an impact player early for the Chiefs, for their defense. And so maybe we have to scale back our expectations at least early in the season for some of the defensive players. I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire can still step in and play as a running back early on, but maybe even his reps could be affected. How do you think the rookie class will be impacted by this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be a league-wide thing. I don't know how you could expect Willie Gay, for instance, to be – why you could expect his production or his ability to help you right away. I don't know how you can expect that to be – as good as it would have been in a normal year right now. I mean, you know, heck, the Chiefs have technically started training camp, right? I mean, and guys aren't even in the – not everybody's allowed in the building yet. I mean, this is just crazy. They won't get on the field even – you know, they can do some walkthroughs, but they won't even go through an OTA-type practice, which, you know, for fans who don't get to watch OTAs, that's basically guys running around in shorts and T-shirts. You know, there's no pads, there's no contact. They won't even be allowed to do that until August 9th. So we're talking almost 2 weeks. So how you can expect Willie Gay and everybody else to be up to speed is hey, I'm not saying it can't happen. I mean, some guys are going to make it work. There's no doubt. But to expect Willie Gay and kind of a, you know, that's not an easy position to learn, the linebacking position. That's a tough one to pick up what the coach wants. We already know Steve Spagnuolo's kind of resistance to playing rookies. I mean, he talked a lot about it last year when Juan Thornhill was catching everybody's eye during training camp. And he's like, well, he's got a lot more he needs to prove to me before I can see he's ready to play. And sure enough, by the season opener, the Chiefs went ahead and made that change. But, you know, we know Spagnuolo's kind of tough on rookies. In that there's a lot that he expects out of them before he's going to put them in the lineup. So, hey, I'm not saying it can't happen for Willie Gay. I just think it's going to be tough. And maybe as things go on, if the season goes on uninterrupted, then maybe you lose a lot of that, and it is time for Willie Gay. You know, the expectations become more realistic. But right now, I just think it's going to be hard for young guys, and not just Willie Gay, but really everybody.
How hard is the running back position going to be for Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and maybe can they just limit the packages to where, you know, he only has to learn a certain part of the offensive playbook so that he can get out there and help the team?
Yeah, they might have to do that early in the season, at least. That's not an unreasonable thing to think. You know, I know that the Chiefs, you know, have a lot of big plans for him, but you know, he was not going to. I think. Not that Clyde Edwards-Helaire wasn't going to have a big impact, but if you're talking about a real weakness for the Chiefs, and Willie Gay was the guy that they were really counting on to clear up a pretty major weakness, and that's their pass coverage at linebacker. And, you know, is he going to be able to do that right away? I think Edwards-Helaire, I don't want to call everything the Chiefs get from him gravy early in the season. I don't feel that way, but I just feel like Gay is the guy who they need more right away to play well than Edwards-Helaire. I think you know, the Chiefs will be fine with the guys they have at running back right now, but Willie Gay is the guy that that they're going to have to get up to speed as fast as possible.
Adam Teicher is our guest. All right, Adam, the other big story in the NFL over the weekend was the blockbuster trade between the Jets and Seattle. The Jets deal Jamal Adams in a fourth-round pick in 2022 to Seattle in exchange for Bradley McDougal, first-round pick in 2021, a third-round pick in 2021, and a first-round pick in 2022. And then I loved all the people arguing about draft assets and going for it now and everything else. What's your opinion of this deal? Was it was Seattle, or you're on their side, or do you think they gave way too much up for Jamal Adams?
Well, the Seahawks gave up a lot. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, giving up two number ones is a pretty hefty price to pay. But you know what you're getting here. I mean, Jamal Adams is a premier safety, and they've had a number of those guys back there and made it work for them. I mean, back when it was Legion of Boom, I mean, that was a big part of what they were doing, and he'll help them get back there. So, I like the trade from the Jets. I like what the Jets got in return, but Jets have been so bad with their drafts. They've just not done a very good job, and you just wonder, are they going to make – I mean, they have the ability to make this a good trade, the Jets do, but will they do that? So I kind of like Seattle's I kind of think when we look back on this trade in 5 years or whatever, we'll say Seattle got the better end of the deal. I just have no faith in the Jets' ability to identify talent and keep it around. I mean, they keep having to trade guys like Jamal Adams because they can't keep him happy. And they had to do that before with guys like Sheldon Richardson. I mean, so, you know, it's just one of those things where I right now I feel like Seattle will be the winner of this trade. And even though that is a lot to give up, and, if you're a team that did a lot better in the draft in recent years, I might like it better from that other team's aspect, but not from the Jets. I just feel like they're going to end up screwing this.
You see, and this is the way I look at it, like, especially Seattle. You know, the Chiefs didn't give up as much, but the Chiefs gave up a lot for Frank Clark, and it worked. And he yep. was a final piece, maybe the missing piece that the defense needed, and the Chiefs went to the Super Bowl and won it, and he was a big part of that. And so Seattle can see it from that vantage point, like, hey, it worked for Kansas City, it can work for us. And from, like, when I saw it, I just saw Seattle acquires Jamal Adams. I said, okay, there's my Super Bowl pick, Chiefs, Seahawks in the Super Bowl. And then I saw how much, I go, oh, my God, they gave up a lot. But if that makes me think that I'm going to pick them for the Super Bowl, and if they get to the Super Bowl, screw it. It's worth it, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I there's no doubt it is. So, a little bit of a gamble on their part. But, I think Seattle's going to come out the winner of this trade. I really do.
So one of the things I saw that I can't remember who tweeted it out this morning is that he's going to stay on – part of this deal is he's going to stay on that rookie contract, which means they don't have to pay him a lot of money this year. But that there's no guarantee of a long-term deal after that. I'm curious what both you get, Steven and Adam, what you guys think of that situation. You give up that much, but not necessarily a guarantee that you're going to have him for a few years.
Yeah, well, the Seahawks have to have some plans. They have to have a plan for that. They've got to know, okay, this is what we're going to try to do with him in terms of a contract, and hopefully we can make it work. And they also have the franchise tag that they could use on him if it came to that.
Right.
So, the Seahawks do have that. I mean, they it's not like they're guaranteed to just have 1 year of this guy. I mean, there's a good chance that he'll be around for longer. So I'm sure that the Seahawks, that's a pretty smart organization. John Schneider does a good job. I just feel like there's a plan there. They've already built into their budget his contract and what they hope to be able to pay him. So I feel like he'll be in Seattle for longer than just 1 year.
All right, there's Adam Teicher. You can catch him every Monday morning on the Border Patrol with myself, Stephen St. John, and Jake Gutierrez. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll hear from Josh Briscoe. You can hear him every night on Almost Entirely Sports. Right after this on NFL Live KC. NFL Live KC continues on your home for the National Football League Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Bucati with you. And, of course, every night you can also hear the amazing musings of the wildly talented but sometimes bellicose Josh Briscoe. I don't even really know what that means, but Josh Briscoe is on every night with Almost Entirely Sports, and he's got a breakdown for some of the things you might have missed on Sports Radio 810 WHB as it pertains to the NFL.
Thank you, Nate. That's a word I did not have to Google that I totally knew before you used it just now. Bellicose. I'm fine with it. One of the things you may have missed today is a little two-minute drill action from the program with Seren Petro. I want to take a little bit of time to look at the Jamal Adams trade, and Dan Schwartzman was on the program today with Petro. They talked about this from a few angles. The first thing they started with, though, was Dan surprised by the return that the Jets got for Jamal Adams?
You know, that's a great way to put it. I'm not shocked that Adams isn't a Jet. I think he made his own bet when he went to the New York Daily News and criticized the owner, criticized Adam Gase, pretty much took no prisoners there, right? I'm shocked that Joe Douglas, with limited, let's put it this way, his options were limited because Jamal Adams had a nuclear philosophy as to how to get out of New York, yet somehow was able to fleece two first-round picks and an exchanging of fourth for a third-round pick with Seattle for a non-premium position player who has two career interceptions in 3 years. So Joe Douglas brought Christmas early for Jets fans who never thought he could get such a return. And by the way, according to Pro Football Focus, you know, the safety that came back, Bradley McDougal, in that deal, is not a bad player. So I think, face value, Joe Douglas and the Jets did very well in that deal.
So the Jets ended up getting a good return there from Schwartzman's perspective. What about the Seahawks, though? Did they overpay? Did they end up paying out in a situation where they had very little leverage? That's more or less where Dan goes.
And by the way, this is the second deal that, you know, Douglas has done as Jets GM where you're like, wow. I mean, he fleeced the New York Giants for Leonard Williams, a guy that Jets had no intention of re-signing or even really, you know, franchising for $16 or $17 million. He had a third and a fifth for a guy playing out a contract when the Jets are pretty much going to let him go and take a compensatory pick for him. So, you know, he's a patient GM that gets his way, who understands it. And as, you know, Brian Baldinger of the NFL Network, a good friend of mine, told me, because, this is stuff you talk about. He said, Joe Douglas has a plan. You know, you look at previous Jets GMs like Mike Maccagnan and the John Idzik, who was just a disaster. The fact is, Douglas seems to know what he's doing. He's using that Ravens philosophy. He was schooled by Ozzie Newsome in that philosophy, which is you build through the draft, be patient, get good value for players, and he has certainly done that. So as a Jet fan, I finally feel for the first time in a long time that this organization is in good hands.
So cause for optimism if you're a Jets fan, right, in this deal and just looking at your front office. But what about ownership? Seren asked Dan if he thinks that from Woody Johnson on down, if the ownership with the Jets is at this point fundamentally rotten.
That's a great question. Now, first of all, Chris Johnson may be somewhat of a boot, but he is, I think, kind of liked by the players. He's a player's owner. Again, he's not really the owner because his brother Woody is the real owner. But look, I think Woody Johnson's intentions as an owner are good. Like, the guy spends money. He has gone out. And whatever happened in England, you know, the allegations against him, the fact is he has hired two black head coaches in Herman Edwards. Yep. And he also brought in Todd Bowles. Let's get that out of the way there. Because, again, I don't know what he said or what he didn't. That's not like Donald Sterling where there's recordings. But if he said it, shame on him, obviously. The reality is, I think he has good intentions. I just don't think he's hired the right people for the job. He's kind of fallen into a trap. There's talk the Jets don't have a lot of cash in hand, which would be an obvious issue if that is true. But I think what it comes down to is, you know, Jamal Adams is an outspoken guy who wants to be a team leader, but the fact remains, is he really a team leader when he goes to the media and cries or goes on social media and cries? And I think Seattle's got to look at that and say, we've inherited this. Is he going to suddenly wake up tomorrow because he got off a plane in Seattle and be the good soldier on the team and actually be a true team leader? I mean, that's a great question that I think he's got to answer because he wanted to be a leader in New York. He was the captain last year, but come on, let's be honest, Seren, the guy acted like a petulant child in this whole process.
That's Dan Schwartzman from the program earlier today. I would take a little bit of offense or a little bit of issue, I suppose, with the idea that Jamal Adams was solely in the wrong here. He also got what he wanted, and the Jets ended up getting a great return for an excellent player. So I don't mind a player deciding that he doesn't want to be in an organization that he feels has been distrustful with him and been untruthful towards him, but that's not for me to say because I'm not hosting NFL Live. You can hear me talk about it tonight on Almost Entirely Sports, though, which will start here at 8 o'clock. Hand back over to you, Nate, the natural. I didn't think of a good alliterative name for you. I'm sorry.
All right. Thank you very much, Bellicose Briscoe. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to check in Seattle to find out the latest on the Jamal Adams trade with Matt Michaelis. He, of course, breaks down the NFL, among other things, at his day job with KJR Radio. He joins us next, right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, NFL KC Live. And we're back to wrap things up on this edition of the... I'm sorry, that again. 3-2-1. And we're back to wrap... Oh, man, I can't start today. 3-2-1. Yeah. And we're back to wrap things up on this edition of NFL KC Live on your home for the National Football League in Kansas City, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Bucati with you, and as promised, we're going to talk a little Seattle Seahawks right now because they made the biggest splash this past weekend on the trade market, and joining us now to talk about all of that is Matt Michaelis of KJR Radio in Seattle. Matt, hey man, how you doing? Thanks for joining us today.
Doing all right, Nate. Glad to be on with you. Thanks a lot.
So let me ask you this, with the trade of Jamal Adams to the Seattle Seahawks trying to reignite that defense for you guys up in Seattle, does this in your mind push the Seahawks to the top when it comes to maybe the favorites to make it to the Super Bowl in the NFC this coming season?
Well, this alone I don't think is going to do it, because they still have yet to address the most glaring need on their team, and that is the pass rush. They had a bad pass rush last year, and that's with Jadeveon Clowney. They don't have Clowney back as of right now. They can go get him. He's out there, but there's no guarantee that he'll be back. And the defensive line in general was poor last year. They brought in Bruce Irvin. They brought in Benson Mayoa as free agents. But nothing is going to make up for what Clowney brings as far as a presence up front. And so while, you know, Jamal Adams, obviously the very, very good safety, the kind of safety they haven't had around here in a few years, I just don't think that that move really catapults them into a Super Bowl conversation.
So, Matt, are you telling me that did the Seahawks maybe miss Frank Clark more than they thought they would? I know they didn't make that trade because they wanted to get rid of him. I know they did it because everybody has to make decisions when it comes to the salary cap. Do they miss him more than they thought they would?
I mean, maybe. Look, I mean, they're in a different place now than they were then as far as the salary cap. I mean, every team would like to have a Frank Clark. Frank Clark wanted top three to top five defensive player in the league money. He wanted near Khalil Mack money. And he's not Khalil Mack. I mean, he's a very good defensive end. You saw there in Kansas City what he was able to do last year, but he just didn't warrant that kind of contract the Seahawks felt. And so they were caught off guard because they were planning on him taking like the next deal in line. So probably about in the 16, maybe $17 million range, right around what the franchise figure would have been for Frank Clark. Then you get DeMarcus Lawrence who signs with the Cowboys for a ridiculous number, and Frank Clark wasn't going to take anything less than that. So they were in a position where they had to either trade Frank Clark or pay him, and they weren't going to pay him that figure. So they end up trading him. They got a pretty good ransom back in return, and they were able to take the first rounder that they got back in the Frank Clark trade, slide back in the draft and pick up a bunch of other assets. You know, that's why you have DK Metcalf on this team and Ugo Amadi and some others, Travis Homer. So Ben Burkervin, they were able to take that draft pick and really make a lot out of it. But you still have to be able to replace that player. They did it for one season with Jadeveon Clowney. He's not a pure pass rusher, but at least he's really disruptive defensively. So, but as far as a long-term plan, they haven't filled that need yet.
Once again, we're visiting with Matt Michaelis of KJR Radio in Seattle. So let's go back to this trade. We know what the Seahawks got is a really good football player in Jamal Adams. What about what they gave up? What's your take on how much the Seahawks gave up in order to get this player?
Well, it's quite a lot. I mean, 2 ones, a 3, and Bradley McDougald. You get Adams and a 4 back. And it's not like I don't recognize how great of a talent Jamal Adams is, and I think he could be a really good fit with what Seattle wants to do defensively. It's just if they're going to give up those kinds of assets, look, you could have probably given up one first-rounder and gotten a Yannick Ngakoue from Jacksonville or a Matthew Judon from Baltimore, somebody who's actually going to help you where you're deficient. Seattle's secondary was improving. Their safeties actually were good with Bradley McDougald, although he's aging. Bradley McDougald and Quandre Diggs, who Diggs they got in a trade last year with Detroit for a 5th-round pick. And the youngster Marquise Blair, who was a 2nd-round pick in the 2019 draft. So it's not like this was a huge position of need. So to give up 2 first-round picks and a 3rd-round pick, I mean, that it's quite a haul. And in my opinion, overpaying for something that you didn't need necessarily in the first place.
How good do you think this NFC West is going to be? For my money, from the outside, I feel like it might be the strongest division in the entire NFL in 2020.
I mean, it is. It is, no question. San Francisco, they're not taking any steps back. The Rams, the second half of the season, really seemed to figure it out offensively. I don't know what was going on with their offense in the first half. It probably had something to do with counting on Todd Gurley, and it's just kind of a mystery what happened to him out in L.A. And the Cardinals are certainly up and coming. Kyler Murray, second year with that offense that Cliff Kingsbury brought up, you know, and I think Arizona has a good chance to finish with 9 or 10 wins. You could close your eyes and see any of the 4 teams in that division actually winning it. So it's the toughest division in football, and if you're not getting better, you're getting worse right now in the NFC West.
So, and one thing that I'm doing just because of the climate that we're in right now, when we have guests on, is if you'll pardon the metaphor, a little of a temperature check. Yeah. How are you guys in Seattle feeling about, like, in terms of optimism of getting camp going and getting into this season, especially considering what the town of Seattle went through very early in this pandemic? Where are you guys now, and what's the optimism like around Seattle right now?
Yeah, this was one of the first places where it really was an issue, and it was, you know, kind of put to bed for a while around here. You know, this was one of the better, I think, responses to COVID-19 and the outbreak and everything. But in about the last month, you have seen a real uptick. You know, and potentially we could be rolling back a phase here in King County. So, I mean, the response has been pretty good. You know, I think that they're just trying to get it to where, obviously, you don't want the hospitals to be overwhelmed again, and we're not in danger of that right now. So at least up here, things are all right with COVID-19. They're getting a little bit worse, but like I said, they're thinking of scaling back, adding some more restrictions so we can, you know, as long as people are doing what they're supposed to do, then, you know, it should go back to a pretty manageable level.
Well, it's we're all certainly holding out hope and optimism for that here in Kansas City as well. Hey, Matt, we appreciate the time and the insight on the Seahawks. I think we could be looking at a matchup in the Super Bowl between the Chiefs and Seahawks, possibly, hopefully, if we get there later on. So we'll see if that happens. But again, thanks for the time, Matt. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Nate. We'll see you.
Okay, that is Matt Michaelis, and he is – a member of that radio staff at KJR in Seattle. And that's going to do it for us on this edition of NFL KC Live on your home for the National Football League in Kansas City, Sports Radio 810 WHB.